Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Ivamy.
And I'm Diana McCollum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of superhero television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are going to be talking about The Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk, our final MCU movie we've never done.
This is it. After this, it's only new MCU movies are the only things that we can cover for the MCU.
That's weird to think of that.
Yeah.
Like, we've done the whole, like, really out of order, but...
Definitely very out of order.
But you can find all of them.
You know, yeah.
We have done them all.
Yeah, someone, a fan could put them in, you know, you could just hit play in the order of your preference, you know. You can make your own cut. Hashtag release the Talk From Superheroes cut. Like, whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah, are they like MCU chronological, when they came out chronological? There's
right.
always those different views.
Right. You live your life.
You live your Talk From Superheroes best life.
Yeah. But you can get them all here. You can listen to them in whatever order. This is the last one, the only one that we haven't done. The only one that we had to watch on Netflix and not at Disney Plus. I don't know what it's going to be like in the country that you might be listening to this to, but it's on Netflix here because the distribution of this is still owned by Universal.
I thought it was Paramount, but it wasn't.
It was Universal.
Oh, it was Universal. Either way, Marvel didn't own the rights to the Hulk when they made this.
Yeah, and I don't know if they've reverted back, and that's partially why they haven't made more of these, or I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, we didn't get a deep dive into it, and I don't know if there is any information about it, because like also I don't feel like anyone's clamoring for another Hulk movie.
Yeah,
but there
is
She-Hulk coming out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I assume it's the same property, but I wouldn't say for sure.
No, you still got to buy those separately. So, like, it would be. I mean, I'm
not
saying.
You don't get a bundle?
I'm not saying.
No Hulk bundle?
I'm not saying Universal doesn't own She-Hulk, but I'm saying that they don't own She-Hulk by default of owning distribution rights for Hulk, if that is still the contract. But yeah, it's the only one that's not on Disney Plus, or the only one I've noticed that's not on on its parent company's streaming service.
Which is kind of a kick in the pants when we're like, we got Disney Plus because it has every single Marvel movie.
Except
and you're like,
except The Incredible
you're
Hulk.
Lucky we also have Netflix, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Canada. Maybe it's different down in the States.
It might be different elsewhere, but it's still one that like they needed a separate deal for whatever is going on. Because this is the outlier, the Edward Norton.
He's not even the Hulk, they say.
Hey, wait a minute.
That's Universal's Hulk.
Hey.
That's not Marvel's Hulk.
Did you say Universum?
Old reference. But a Marvel movie reference.
Oh, yeah. Was that Elektra?
That was Elektra.
Elektra was made by Universum Pictures.
Old school episode with Jocelyn Getty, if you're looking for a great re-listen.
Go
to
back
an
and listen to that. It is great. Universum. Not Universal, Universum Pictures.
So Universal owned the Hulk, and Universum owned
Elektra.
That definitely was a mumbly phone call.
Oh, yeah, something went wrong there.
But yeah, we're doing the Hulk because Shang-Chi's coming out.
Next week, we will be doing Shang-Chi, and that's going to be, I was going to say first new Marvel movie in a while, but we also saw Black Widow. But the first one that I think this one's going exclusive theaters, so it doesn't have the Disney Plus release like Black Widow did.
So we gotta go see it on that big old screen, which we probably will, because Simu Liu, Toronto boy.
Yeah, we'll go see our Toronto boy. So we're gonna be covering that next week. We're doing the Incredible Hulk with Edward Norton today, and I think that's it. That's all we gotta say at the beginning. So why don't we just get right into it?
Let's talk about the Incredible Hulk.
All right, we have seen The Incredible Hulk for not the first time. We've seen it before, but we've seen it again. Diana, did you like it?
I did like it. I will give this movie a very clean like. It does nothing phenomenal, and it does nothing bad. It really walks that fine, like, we are an adequate film in every single way. No one is crushing it. No one is sucking. The effects are pretty good. They're not the best I've ever seen. Actually, for 2008, they're pretty good. And the story is, like, fine. There's some laughs. There's some fun references. Everything is just at that, like, you sure did do it, pal. Here's your sticker. You get a sticker, The Incredible Hulk. Which I will say, My like has lessened over the years because, as Andrew and I discussed when we watched the movie, I used to have a huge crush on Edward Norton. One of my only crushes that just went away.
Just gone.
And he didn't even do anything to get rid of it that I know of.
He just didn't do anything to keep it.
He hasn't been, like, holding me in. He hasn't gotten, like, updated his newsletter or done any hot shit lately. So I'm going to give it a flat like. Andrew, how about you?
It's a flat like for me. Like, there are definitely some strong points of this, but for the most part, it's a flat like. It is exactly fine. It is up there with the other MCU movies that have a very mediocre opening into the MCU. Like, I would say that, like, you know, this Doctor Strange, Captain Marvel, the first Thor, they're all kind of on the exact same plane of, like, it's not brutal, it's not bad, it's not good. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, this is entirely fine.
We were figuring it out.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, but now I will say I'm fine about it. I wouldn't turn it off. I would never seek it out. I don't think that there's much reason to, like, go back and rewatch this, especially when William Hurt as General Ross is the only character who has survived into the MCU.
I mean, for all those General Ross heads out there.
The General Ross heads would want to go back for their deep cut rewatch and the General Ross order.
Yeah,
the General Ross.
You know how he's the huge breakout character of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
Not Hulk, not the Abomination.
No.
Not the leader.
It's
General Ross.
He is well cast. Yeah, William Hurt is perfect for that
role. Not mad at him, but doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But carry on.
But no, that's it. I just think it's a nice middle-of-the-road movie. I think it falls into, like, when I compare it to the other kind of mediocre first movies, like your Thor, your Captain Marvel, your Doctor Strange, and with Hulk, they did realize this is a better ensemble character, but it is on par with all of the other films from characters that are better ensemble characters.
Mm.
Like, Thor is better in an ensemble, with the exception of Ragnarok, but even then,
that becomes a
Guardians of the Galaxy ensemble movie. Hulk, they switched to ensemble. Doctor Strange, way better in Infinity War and Endgame than his own movie. Captain Marvel, I think, also better as an ensemble. We'll see what they can do with a second one of that. But I think this is just this is the mediocre movie of a character that works better in an ensemble piece.
And this is what's wild about the Hulk to me. I agree with all of this. And I've always thought the Hulk was an ensemble character. Like, I've never read an interesting Hulk comic. I'm sure there are some. You're going to tweet them at me. They're probably great. But, like, he always works better with the team. He's always more interesting with the team. I just have never found a singular Hulk story interesting. Like, I never thought the show was all that compelling. It just isn't a character. Like, he's just on the run. And it's like, that should be exciting, but it always feels a little bit boring to me. I think because he has almost no supporting cast.
Right.
And he should be an ensemble character. But what I find so interesting about the Hulk is that he is the most established Avenger. Like, this movie has so many references to other Hulk things, like purple pants, everyone gets that. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry, everyone gets that. The music that plays when he walks down the road, like, they're like, Lou Ferrigno is here. No other Marvel movie has this many references to the previous iterations of their character, because the Hulk is the only one who has previous iterations, but he's also the only one who never got a sequel.
I would honestly say, like, it would be Hulk and then Spider-Man.
Oh, Spider-Man. Yeah, all right. See, he was a late entry to the MCU, but you're absolutely right.
I agree, late entry to the MCU. I think Spider-Man might not have been, purposefully, might not have been as self-referential, but very similar to the Hulk in this movie, to be like, we're not even doing an origin story because you know this origin story. You know this character so well.
Exactly what I'm saying.
But at this point, it's like, it had a live-action show. It had had, you know, cartoons, which all of them had, but, like, it had cartoons, it had had a live-action show, it had had a movie not too many years prior. What was that, like, 5 or 8 years prior?
I want to say about 5. I don't think it was very many. Yeah.
So it had just recently had a movie, whereas, like, Iron Man, Captain America, Thor had not had anything.
Nothing. Black Widow, nothing. Hawkeye, nothing.
So,
like, no core Avengers other than Hulk are even known to the general public at this point.
Yeah, or had even been cast for live action.
Yeah.
Like, the only previous Thor was on a single episode of The Incredible Hulk in the 70s. Like, the only other, like, Thor in a goofy Nordic costume.
Yeah, and maybe Adventures in Babysitting? I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, he definitely was the most established character. One thing I will give this movie credit for, that I think I'll give the whole first phase of Marvel credit for, which actually kind of stands out to me on rewatch of this movie, is that a lot of people give the current age of Marvel credit for like being different and experimental, to be like Taika can do what they want with Ragnarok, like Infinity War and Endgame is like a very different theatrical two-part experience, and people just being like, oh, we're trying, you know, Black Panther obviously like being something that previous executives at Marvel were reticent to do, and wrongfully so, but a different era for new creators trying new types of things. I didn't really appreciate how experimental phase one of the Marvel stuff was, because Iron Man was obviously very successful and I think is a very traditional blockbuster popcorn summer action movie. But you go from Iron Man to this, which is a very silent Western wanderer tale. Like, it's a very quiet movie. There's very little dialogue in this. And then Thor, which we've discussed before, is Shakespearean Kenneth Branagh's Henry V in space. Mm-hmm. And then we have Captain America, which is a period piece from the director of Rocket Man, was it?
Or Rocketeer.
Rocketeer. So Rocket Man is the Elton John one. Rocketeer. very different tones.
Would have been a crazy choice. I would have loved that. He could have directed the parts when he's in the ISO.
Oh, yeah. That would have been fun. The Rocketeer. So, like, to have that as your first phase, yes, one traditional popcorn action movie with Iron Man, but then a silent Western wandering tale, a Shakespearean Henry V, and then a Rocketeer period piece. That is a very experimental first round of movies leading up to the Avengers, and it didn't seem like it at the time. At the time, it felt very samey. But then when you go to, like, that middle section of Marvel where it's not as experimental as the beginning, but we don't have new heads of the studio to try different stuff, I think, like, the Thor 2, that Phase 2 stuff is where it gets very – your Age of Ultron, your Dark World, that's when it gets very, like, bland popcorn. We want everyone to be Iron Man 1, and none of it works.
I would agree with this, yes, because Phase 2 feels like – they just, whenever they did a sequel to something in phase one, they didn't change anything. They're like, people liked that Thor was like this. Thor's like this. Iron Man 2 and 3, very similar. And then Winter Soldier is the only one that stands out because it goes from a World War II movie to a spy thriller.
Yeah.
It's the only one that changed genre. Yeah. So it's the only movie in phase two that is exceptional.
Yeah.
The rest of phase two is very much like, we tried to copy phase one. And then Marvel learned like, oh, you can't just copy phase one.
Yeah.
You have to grow with every phase. You have to make Thor 3 so violently different from Thor 1 and 2.
Right, right.
You have to, I guess, stop making Iron Man movies and just put them in Spider-Man movies. Like, you gotta change it up. But yeah, there is definitely, and I would even say in this movie itself, not just in phase 1, there is so early on some versions of tropes that I just think we hadn't seen before. Like, you know, I think you wouldn't like me when I'm hungry is groundbreaking. It doesn't seem that way now,
okay.
But like, I feel like every other kind of like remake of these kind of movies would just have you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Right.
They wouldn't, until this era, you wouldn't have you wouldn't like me when I'm hungry.
Self-referential joke of it. Yeah.
Self-referential like purple pants jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the self-referentialness came here first, but this is the, as we said, the only property that has like an established past.
I would say that there are definitely instances of it beforehand. I see what you're saying. It definitely sets a precedence in the MCU. I think there are moments like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man series where there's a violin player on the street doing the 60s animated theme song and stuff like that. So I think that there are previous iterations of like this self-referential, like referencing the iconography of like previous stuff. But I agree with you. This is like a very like jokey subversion. It feels out of place in this movie, though.
Jokey subversion doesn't fit the movie it's in.
Yes, absolutely. Because this is such a like quiet, introspective, very, very serious, and takes itself seriously, and the, you know, Bruce Banner, and especially Edward Norton's Bruce Banner, has no sense of humor about himself. And granted, that joke is played straight. He doesn't know that he's telling a joke. But to even see humor come from Edward Norton's Bruce Banner just doesn't track or make sense. It's not the guy for it.
It's not, especially because he is playing Bruce with, like, I would say a mild case of PTSD. He's getting flashbacks to what the Hulk has done. He's on the run. He's living in terror. There is there is no humor in this character, but like purposefully, not in a way that I'm like, Edward Norton can't do humor. I think he probably can. He chooses not to. So yeah, the few moments of humor are, I mean, I guess that's what the MCU has learned, I think. The few moments of humor are probably the best parts of the movie, but that's not what this movie is.
Right.
Like falling out of the plane and not changing and saying, oh shit. One of the best moments in the movie.
Right.
Doesn't fit anything about this Bruce that we've seen.
No.
He wouldn't do that.
No.
He would just silently die. He would just fall and be like, that is my fate. Boom.
Boof.
He wouldn't go, oh shit.
Yeah.
That's not what this character's been like.
Yeah, I agree. It feels like those jokes are holdovers from a version of the script before Edward Norton was cast. Mm. Like, it feels like it's like that was a those were generic jokes for we aren't sure what actor's going to play this. Mm. And then clearly a lot of this stuff was reworked and repassed, as is the rumors of Edward Norton on every film he's worked on, which is that he basically wants to rewrite the entire script. So it's somewhat tricky to know what's what, but that doesn't feel like Edward Norton approved those lines.
Yeah, it almost feels like all the jokes were there and every serious Bruce scene was Edward Norton's rewrite.
Yeah.
But also Bruce has so few lines in this movie.
It's a very quiet movie. I do kind of like that it is this quiet, and it's a Western tale, it's a samurai tale, it's the tale of the wanderer, the man who wanders through, who isn't looking for trouble and always finds trouble. There's a million different variations of it, whether it's like a gunslinger or a shogun or whatever you have going on.
Littlest hobo.
your classic dog tale. But someone who just wants no trouble and can't help but get into trouble. And it works. And I like that it's quiet and I like that it's different. There's a lot of that actually does land in this movie.
Oh no, I also like that it's quiet. It really does add, like, you feel like you're on this journey with Bruce. Like, I think honestly the most poignant scenes in the movie are when he is genuinely homeless. Like after he hulks out in Brazil, he's in, I forget what country he's in after that, but Portugal.
Guatemala, I believe.
Guatemala.
Yeah.
And he's just like in tatters begging for money on the side of the road, and you get the counter goes by and you're like, "Oh, he's been there for 2 weeks trying to get enough money to leave." Like, this is heartbreaking. This is a hard tale. So like the humor doesn't fit into that story that's being told of this
right.
guy who is like on the run to the detriment of his health. And like, it's not a fun on the run movie.
No, because he's not and I really like this understanding of the character and how this character would kind of fit into this world. He's not a spy.
No.
He's not Captain America or Bucky Barnes on the run, where it's like, I have safe houses, like dead drops. I have a network of people and like shady underground dealings that can help me. So he's not the spy. He's also not the Wolverine type, who's like, I'm going to make money by doing some bare knuckle boxing in like a cage, underground fighting cage match. He cannot use his powers to make money or benefit him in any way or regard. So he is just useless.
Because his only other ability is that he's really smart, and he can't use that because he'd have to go on a payroll and get a paycheck with taxes.
Right, or prove his education.
You can't
or
be a general laborer of smart things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's not a day job.
Yeah, so I think that's brilliant to be like, all of your skills are actually useless in getting you money or getting you anywhere. So you really are just a human being who's just trying to survive from place to place. And I think that's a smart understanding of the character and like a clever analysis of it. I do think that one thing that hurts this movie, though, I don't mind it in principle. So the movie opens with, and we were talking about how Hulk has more media representation, and this movie is kind of self-referential. They skip the origin story. The origin story happens in the opening credits. So it's very similar to the most recent Spider-Man in that regard, where they're like, we don't need an origin story. You know this fucking character. Here we go. I like that, but I think that really does hurt the general Ross personal connection of the hero and villain throughout this movie. Because, like, yes, that's how he got his powers. And we show PTSD. He hurt Betty, and he didn't mean to. And that all comes across through the opening credits. We're wandering. He wants a cure. But then there is this General Ross of it all, where General Ross in the flashback is like, you hurt Betty, get out. And then the next time we see him is like 30, 40 minutes later in the movie. And General Ross is like, get back in. Why did you go? I'm like, okay, why? literally the only shot we've had of him is him telling Bruce to get out. And now he's furious that Bruce has left. And like, I can piece the things together, but there is no connection between the hero and villain here, like, other than Betty. Like, we have a connection with Betty, but for the most part, I'm like, I never got to see the villain be mad at the hero. I never saw the villain reject the hero and throw them out, but then want their value. Like, there are lines from General Ross of being like, he's property of the American government and we need him back. And it's like, well, then, and like, my job comes over my emotion. Well, then why did you kick him out?
Why did you kick him out when he had, like, a broken arm and he was all beat to shit? Like, that was the time to grab him. You could have got him yourself.
Yeah.
General Ross could have just bear hugged him right there and been like, you're my property now, buddy. Although he might, was he hurt too in that scene?
It looked like he came in from a different room and he was just like hovering over Betty to be like, oh no, my daughter's hurt. But not having any personal connection to the villain, I think, really hurts this movie.
That's a tough one for me because like I feel it because I've seen this movie so many times and like you just know intrinsically that like Betty's dead, you see the explosion. So I actually think it is enough for me. I think one scene, like with dialogue might have helped like early on. You're right. It is a lot to just take in via montage and then be like, this is the main villain. He will never interact with Bruce Banner in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does he ever interact with Bruce Banner? I think maybe when he has that dumb ice pack on his head at the very end. The ice pack killed
me. Oh yeah. The ice pack was funny that they hit him on the head. So they give him an ice pack.
He's the Hulk.
Yeah.
We got to put an ice pack on, his little beam.
You're right, though. I think the funny ice pack moment, that 1 minute from stretcher to helicopter are the only times that that General Ross and Bruce Banner interact, which is a shame because William Hurt is a phenomenal actor, and he is one of the few people who survives into the MCU. And talking about how like it works because we know what's going on and we can still keep up, I think that also, you know, like a movie like Civil War works if they just have those flashes that they have on the TV of a reporter being like, the Sokovia Accords aren't signed. But having William Hurt, actor William Hurt as General Ross in a room is like, listen, Captain, you need to sign. And him laying down exposition in a way that feels threatening but also helpful. Like, he is someone who can sell what the plot of a movie is without it seeming dry. And he does a very good job of that in the MCU movies. And they don't let him do the thing that he's good at here. And that I think holds this movie back to a big degree.
Yeah, you want more Ross with Bruce. Because he's in the movie quite a bit with Blonsky, though, pretty much entirely.
And that's,
he barely even
that's
talks to his daughter.
Yeah.
It is him like in a room yelling into a radio, and then it's him telling Blonsky that like you could be better, man.
Yeah.
We can rebuild you. We can make you stronger, faster.
Now, what do you think of the general casting of this movie? So I think William Hurt is good. I think we can all agree on that. And that might be why he's the only actor who has carried over into the general MCU, with the exception of two lines from Martin Starr, who is working at the university, who is later a teacher at Peter Parker's high school.
I looked this up. Kevin Feige said he is playing the same character.
That is funny.
Why not?
He stayed in New York. He was going to school. I think that was like, I don't know what school that was. It might have been like the typical uptown university or whatever they call it in Marvel.
The Baxter Building University from the Fantastic Four.
And then he's later teaching Spider-Man. But other than those two actors, no one else carries over. But what do you think of the general casting of this movie?
Overall, I like it. Like, I like Tim Roth as Blonsky. I feel like he could do more. But, like, I think Tim Roth is such a good actor, and I think he's great as Blonsky. Edward Norton is good for this version of Hulk, this silent Western version of Bruce that they're going for. He's not so great at the fun parts, but for what most of this movie is, he's very good at it. And then Mark Ruffalo is better at what those Hulks are. Liv Tyler's always so weird casting. I other than Arwen, I don't know who she can play. Like, she fits as an elf. You got, like, a weird, soft, gentle voice that's just naturally, like, high and low at the same time? What what's going on with that, with her voice?
I don't even know how to analyze what her voice is.
How do you describe Liv Tyler's voice?
It is ethereal.
Ooh, ethereal.
Ethereal.
Okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, like if I died, I imagine the first voice I would hear would be something similar to what Liv Tyler sounds like.
100%. So yeah, as Arwen in Lord of the Rings absolutely works. Ethereal, yeah. Timeless, immortal being. But whenever she plays a regular person, I'm just like, I know this is your voice, but no one sounds like this.
No.
And it makes so much disconnect.
It is so soft and breathy and gentle. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. I actually think, rewatching that yesterday, that she would have played a very good Hulk.
Okay.
Because she is playing she is playing Betty Ross exactly how Edward Norton plays Bruce Banner. This like, I'm soft and gentle and I really don't want any trouble and I avoid eye contact. And like, she is playing someone who like speaks into their own chest, doesn't look at you, and is just trying to get through the day. Like, she is giving a performance as if her character has PTSD, which very much her character does or could have, but we're not exploring that. So I feel like she's playing her character as if her character is the Hulk. Like, if you rewatch this whole movie, every scene where, like, her father's like, I'm gonna kill your boyfriend, and she's like, please don't. Like, she is trying not to get upset at so many times. It feels like she's playing it like the Hulk.
I absolutely disagree.
Okay.
I think she is doing a big performance for Liv Tyler. Hear me out.
No, I'm hearing it.
Because like she's going into the pizza place and she's like, come on, make us a pizza. But she's not being shy. That's assertive Liv Tyler. That's Liv Tyler at her most assertive. Like, stop shooting him. And her voice is high because she has a high voice. But that's her being loud and out there for her. Her freaking out at the taxi cab might be the only actual real anger.
Yeah,
taxi driver.
That's true.
Like, that's a real one. That's an actual person's reaction of, like, loudness and anger. But yeah, everything else, I feel like that is not a character as PTSD. That is the biggest Liv Tyler can go. With that breathy voice she has.
Okay, I agree with you to a certain extent. I think she should have and could have been playing it quiet and like Bruce Banner. It is written as a character who's supposed to be strong and firm.
Mm.
It is definitely written for that,
yes.
Which is why she's the terrible casting for this movie. Because, yeah, she is written strong and firm. Someone who's like, no, Dad, you don't get to be like this. Never speak to me again. Get this fucking cab out of here. But she can't. She's trying. I agree with you, she's trying.
But she can't do that.
There was one moment that made me sincerely uncomfortable. And it was when she just reunited with Bruce and they're on the university campus. And Bruce is wearing high-waisted pants with his shirt tucked into it. Like, it's a terrible look. And she does this very, like, girlfriendy thing of, like, you don't tuck in a shirt like that. Like, and goes to untuck him to be like, you look better like this. But she is so soft and embarrassed that I'm like, I feel like I'm like, you shouldn't touch him. Like, I don't know. It feels like she didn't receive consent. Like, it in no way feels like I am your confident ex-girlfriend who is telling you you're dressing slovenly and you need to, this is a shirt that you untuck. You don't know what you're doing. It's just Liv Tyler. And it's trying to have this like cute girlfriend boyfriend moment to be like, look how much chemistry these two have. And instead, it feels like someone who has a restraining order against her touching someone she's not legally allowed to touch because she's like, you shouldn't tuck in your shirt like that. And she's like quickly snapping at his shirt to plug it out. Like, she's not comfortable touching or being near him.
They don't have that ease of a girlfriend boyfriend. I mean,
not
I guess
at all.
When your boyfriend could literally Hulk out at any moment, like, oh God, maybe he likes it tucked in though. Should I untuck it? Like, well, how high is his heart rate right now? Let me see his wrist real quick. Like, there is always that in the back of your mind. But I agree there is no sexual component there. To me, it didn't feel restraining ordery. That moment in particular felt like a mom getting their kid ready for school.
A little bit that too,
like, it was not boyfriend-girlfriend. It was very much like, no, you don't tuck in your shirt. Because then she takes off his hat and fixes his hair.
Yeah, and he's like,
which is also like very like, let me slick your hair back, buddy.
And he avoids eye contact and says, it pushes my hair down too hard. And I'm like, oh my God, are you a child? What is going on here?
What is that line about, right?
Yeah, and she's like, I know, I'm sorry. Like she sounds in physical pain when she has to touch him under any circumstance.
Yeah, like, is this romance written by the same people who wrote like Padme and Anakin? I guess that was George Lucas. We know for a fact that one. So it wasn't him.
But it has that same energy.
It has that same lack of chemistry of like, you don't know. Which is weird because I will say the one moment that I think they really, really work is when he stays over the night at her place and she goes to drop him off clothes.
Yeah.
And then they just kind of stand in the hall and there actually is like a real tension there and they have just reunited so they both are awkward. They don't know where they stand with each other. That scene actually I really felt it from them. But every other scene just felt like kind of boyfriend-y girlfriend to the point where they couldn't even transition from the hair cutting to standing and kissing. Like, remember that weird transition?
Yeah.
They're cutting hair. She's kissing his cheek. And they're like, okay, we're going to go into the sex scene. And then there's a hard cut to standing.
Yeah.
Which is like 30 seconds later, I'd assume.
It's weird time jumps. But they're on camera the whole time. So it doesn't do that like thing where like it cuts to a close-up of like the clock or the bed and then pan over. Time has passed. It is just like jump cutting like a YouTube tutorial video on how to fuck. Like, that honestly what it feels like, where it's like, hey, what's up, fam? Here's how you fuck. You're going to start with some neck stuff, jump cut to, and now we're about 2 minutes later, we're standing up, we're going to
smooch, and now jump to, you're on the bed. Your heart rate's getting up. Oh, you better watch it. That watch is going to go off. Uh-huh. Keep it low.
Keep it real low. But yeah, it felt like a jump cut YouTube tutorial.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, that was a real weird edit. They needed to just shoot literally anything in between the standing and the sitting.
Yeah.
So yeah, they had a little lack of chemistry. And I think that's most of the cast, except for Samuel Stearns as the leader. Or not the leader, sorry.
Samuel Stearns is the character. Yeah, Tim Blake Nelson, yeah. Who doesn't need to be in this movie at all. at all, in any way. I get that we're trying to set up future things, but I'm like, this character does nothing and is around for no particular reason at all. It is dumb and idiotic.
And also, I feel like one of the MCU's only loose ends.
Yeah, one of the very few.
Like, it's very early days, so I can forgive it, obviously, because also everything from this movie is a loose end. Where has Betty been?
Yeah.
For 8 years of films.
But to be fair, Betty doesn't have superpowers.
We've still see Bruce so often.
But Bruce has superpowers.
Yeah, but he's never like, these are the reasons I can't go back to Betty, or this is I'm keeping track of Betty, but I can't go back to her. Like, he just never brings up the love of his life, whose life he ruined, who like still wants him back.
Right.
Even though he's like on the news, he's a public member of the Avengers.
Fair enough. I'm okay with romances ending off camera.
I need them to be acknowledged.
I think a person with a mutant brain, I would like to be acknowledged on camera. Mm. A romance ending off camera, I'm okay with.
You get the Ragnarok, Thor just being like, me and Jane broke up. I'm like, that's all I need.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's all I need. I need a line about how you and Jane broke up because you're from space and she's from here. And that makes all the sense in the world.
Mm.
And I need you just to say, like, I went to Betty once I saved the world from the Chitauri. We didn't work it out, but I said goodbye or something. Something like that. And now maybe I'll be with Black Widow, but I won't. And all this other garbage. But yeah, the leader feels weird as like Marvel's only like thing they set up and never paid off for the most part that I can think of.
And never even like a quick one write-off. Like what you're saying about like Jane and like that type of thing. I almost expect that for the leader. Like there is one line to be like, oh, we captured like the leader also that week after. Like he called himself the leader. He had a big head. He was a dumb guy.
Don't even call him the leader. Just like some guy with a big green head.
Some guy with a big head. Apparently you knew him. I don't know. Jackass. We got him. Like a quick Nick Fury line or something like that to be like the people we're capturing have been getting weirder ever since the Avengers incident. We caught a guy with a big green head. Yeah, something like that.
Walking through Harlem.
Yeah, a big veiny head. Looked miserable. Looked absolutely miserable.
We'll never see him again.
Yeah. So I'm with you there. I think this whole character did not need to be in this movie whatsoever.
I didn't mind him. I like the idea of like curing him briefly and all this stuff. But I think my favorite thing about Mr. Blue, because he's on the computer so much before we actually meet him, I love how fucking dramatic a typer he is.
Mm.
So him and like Bruce are like DMing each other, and they're just like, well, I'll need the flowers to ... send. He hit send. Find a cure. Send. All of his messages are broken up like he's got like a limit of numbers.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. It's a chat window.
Yeah, that is true. It
He's so over the top with it.
He's a dramatic bee, that is for sure. The thing that bothers me most about or one of the things that bother me most about him is that they dress him like a boy.
Oh, yes.
Did you notice? Like,
was that the only blue shirt they had in wardrobe?
I don't understand what's... Because they show up, and he's supposed to be, like, this tenured professor who runs the, like, biology department of this university or whatever. But he's wearing, like, an ill-fitting university t-shirt and then, like, an ill-fitting cardigan and, like, sloppy... He looks like he's living in a dorm. They dress him like a university... Like a first-year university student who's barely surviving midterms. And he's supposed to be, like, the smartest tenured professor. They fucked up his, like, look really, really bad.
Yeah, especially when they, like, reveal his lab. Like, this is a university professor who has, I'm going to say, billions of dollars of equipment that's just right. for him. He's got these lab tables, these huge banks of computers that, like, put blood into you and centrifuges. And then he reveals a room full of gallons of blood.
Yeah.
That's just for him. That's just his blood storage hallways.
Yeah.
Not a room, hallways of blood. And so, like, this is not a supervillain. This isn't an independently wealthy man. This is a tenured professor who's doing this on grant money, I think?
Yeah, who's wearing, like, a giveaway, like, a free university
that was
t-shirt.
A dorm, a free res t-shirt.
Yeah.
Your first week of residence, they're like, you're in the blue house. And he's like, yeah, Mr. Blue, I'm in the blue house.
And then he built a whole personality around it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a very terrible look for that character.
Yeah, I did kind of like in the performance, though, I do like this manic, like, I love science, and it's put me in a real moral gray area of, like, I don't want to do evil, but I don't even particularly want to do good. I just want to see what stuff does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like this kind of manic on-the-line performance he does, but, like, consent has to be given by Blonsky, and then he's like, of course I'll do it now that you know all the risks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I feel like you don't see those kind of characters a lot.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's definitely a few of them around, but, like, yeah, it's a chaotic neutral that
chaotic
I think does
neutral.
Work
Thank
in the
you.
In the movie, yeah.
Since we're on, like, products, kind of, another thing the MCU dropped, there is so much product placement in this movie.
This is the most product placement of any MCU movie.
Absolutely. And in ways that MCU movies don't do anymore. Like,
they'll do a handful. Like, all movies have a couple. And it's typically cars.
It'll be cars.
And cars are usually, like, the least obtrusive for the most part.
Because people drive cars.
People drive cars.
But this movie, and what the MCU does later, is I feel like every piece of technology is either made by Stark or Hammer or S.H.I.E.L.D. But this movie is very much like, technology is this world's technology.
Yeah.
Look at this Sony Pixel camera. Look at this SanDisk USB drive that got 4 close-ups.
Yeah, look at this Norton antivirus.
Which might have been a joke about Edward Norton.
It might have been, but it was also actual product placement.
It was also definitely paid for by Norton antivirus.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, it feels of a different era. It feels very much of a different era of product placement. It feels... more 90s, early 2000s than most MCU movies do feel, because there's a thing with cars are unobtrusive. You know, Tony Stark pulls up driving an Audi, and it's like, well, he drove up in something, and here's just a quick close-up of the car. But when they show Edward Norton start up a computer, and they're like, what does the computer run on startup? Let's watch it load and scan for antivirus. It'll be like, well, this is just 10 seconds of absolutely wasted screen time. So it is not a, like, where do we sneak in during a character beat? It is a, like, let's go out the fuck of our way to waste audience time to look at what is a product placement. It's very outdated.
It is. It felt like the Wayne's World scene. Where they, like, eat the pizzas with the Pepsi hats on and the Doritos. And,
yeah,
it felt like the calling out product placement to that point where it was, yeah, just products you never see product placed anymore MCU movies.
Which never become plot relevant. Like, the SanDisk is the one where I'm like, I would allow that. Like, there is a, you need data from a computer and you don't have reliable pockets when you Hulk out, so you swallow it, which is gross, but like whatever, it's visibly SanDisk. That at least was like, I have a MacGuffin, mm-hmm. and MacGuffin is brand name X. That makes sense.
It will survive if you puke it up. SanDisk.
But the Panasonic Lumix camera, where like he empties her purse and he's like, we need to throw everything out. And it's like, here's a close up of what was in her purse. It's a Panasonic Lumix camera. Can we keep that? We can. Let's take a photo together. Also,
you can't throw out a Panasonic Lumix camera.
And then also later in the movie, I'm going to take it out of my purse because the battery is getting low to get another close-up of the Panasonic Lumix camera. Wow, I'm reviewing my photos on the Panasonic Lumix camera. None of this is plot relevant at all. Just wasted time.
Yeah, it was wild. It was another thing that it was kind of like the comedy, and then it didn't feel like it fit in such a very serious, like, you know, wandering samurai kind of film, like where Edward Norton is doing such a serious performance with Bruce Banner, and then he's like, and now I will swallow the SanDisk USB.
Hi, I'm actor Edward Norton, and when I swallow a USB, I only swallow SanDisk USBs.
It helps me do a more grounded performance when I have real products in my hand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm swallowing the other companies' USBs. Like, what are we doing here? It is just awful and way too much.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a bit too much. I would say, as Torontonians, I think we are obligated by law to mention this was filmed in Toronto.
Yeah, quite a lot of Toronto here. The U of T campus, the University of Toronto campus, is the university campus here. It's Yonge Street and Queen Street that are being wrecked by the Hulk. It is so interesting to see, too, what exteriors they decide to CGI replace.
Yeah.
Because they want it to look like Harlem. This is supposed to be Harlem that he's destroying. So they do add CGI exteriors to be like, I saw a couple places that were like the like Harlem barbershop or whatever, kind of generic businesses. And then obviously they put the Apollo Theater there to be like, world famous Apollo Theater is getting wrecked. But I'm like, the Apollo Theater isn't next to Sam the Record Man and Zanzibar Strip Club. Like, so it's like you only chose to like comp out some of the visual effects to make it look like Harlem, but didn't have the budget to shop all. And maybe if you don't know Harlem or Toronto, you don't notice. You're like, oh, Apollo Theater, and everything else just kind of blurs into a meaningless melange of neon lights. But we notice.
We notice, yeah. As Torontonians, we always notice the Toronto stuff. And it's especially weird now because Sam the Record Man is gone. Mm. I think Zanzibar's still there. Zanzibar ain't going to die. Yeah. Zanzibar can't go anywhere.
It's reliable, yeah.
So for us, it's weird to be like, oh, the Apollo Theater's right there. And like you kind of just like wave over it. But for people from Harlem, they got to be like, we know what's next to the Apollo Theater.
Right, right. It's not Zanzibar and Sam the Record Man.
It must be very famously what is next to the Apollo Theater.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You would know, I would assume. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like that is to choose like the most iconic things on Yonge Street to not take out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a couple buildings that are just like generic scaffolding, like you can leave those in, but to be like Zanzibar Strip Club is right here. It's a strip club for those who don't know.
Strip club for those who don't know.
So it's so bright, it's so noticeable, and I think you'd know if it was next to the Apollo Theater.
I think you would know if that was
That's a fun night. You go to the Apollo, you go to Zanzibar.
It's a double down, quick bang bang.
Actually, Zanzibar is across the street from a Swiss Chalet I really like, and it's always
I did notice Swiss Chalet in there as well.
The
Swiss Chalet made it in. The Swiss Chalet was in the movie.
I didn't notice the Swiss Chalet. Good for them. Yeah. It is always like
I don't even know if Swiss Chalet is in the U.S.
Ooh.
I actually don't know if that's an exclusively Canadian brand.
I feel like I've seen American-esque Swiss Chalet commercials.
I think there might be a Swiss Chalet in the U.S. I don't think there's one across the street from the Apollo Theater, but there might be some Swiss Chalets floating around.
But for other points in this movie, I will say we did talk about how the leader never comes back. I do find it weird that the government and army just never made more super soldiers. Because after the first shot, he worked great.
Yeah, he only was fucked up because of what the leader does, like of what the scientist does.
Well, the second shot seemed to make him a little bad, too.
A little fucked up. But even then, only a little?
Only a little. I say you only need that one shot.
The one shot seemed to legit make him a super soldier.
Yeah, put him on Cap's level. He did that cool Captain America run. like very early MCU, like he was
they had the super run, the magic carpet run. If you look up like behind the scenes magic carpet is what they're called. Yeah,
we have watched how they do that.
Yeah. It's like a truck pulling a like what looks like a red carpet, but it's like a black rubber. But imagine like a thin red carpet, a car is pulling it, and then someone's running on the carpet. So it's their run speed plus whatever the speed of the car is what visually it looks like.
I forgot we had seen behind the scenes of how they do the super soldier run, because in my head I was like, I bet they told those other soldiers to run real slow. And then Tim Roth was just like, woo-hoo!
Just ran real good.
Ran real fast.
Nah, he's on a magic carpet.
No, it makes so much more sense. Yeah. It's actually a visual effect that way. That he would be going faster than everybody else. He'd have more zoom lines on him. So they got the super soldier run. But yeah, like with one dose, like he was never going to beat the Hulk, but he was full cap.
Yeah.
Like the way he was fighting, the moves he was doing, the speed he had gotten, like the fact that General Ross remains a general and is like, well, the super soldier program's a bust after this. Like, absolutely not. Now, he would have made a million more of these guys.
Now, I think Ross doesn't know that the professor, that the leader, did this to him.
Ooh.
No one else was there for that. He thinks that this was a side effect, or the general society thinks this, or anyone who's in the know thinks that this was a side effect of taking the serum.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, because we never go back to the leader to find out, like, what he told anyone or what he... And he's all weird now because he's got stuff in his head.
He's all fucked up, too. Yeah, but I think that is something that, unfortunately, this movie doesn't make clear or explore or kind of go across the line of, like, why didn't you do this to everyone? Do you think that this was the side effect because you weren't that in that room? There's just a little clumsy storytelling around this super soldier and around Abomination. But I agree with you that, like, when he is super soldiered up, that choreography of him running around Hulk is very, very good and really well done. And it really kind of, like, sets up, I think, a style that is continued throughout the MCU, which is quite remarkable for a director who doesn't seem to have any other impact on the MCU. Louis Leterrier, a French director who did just this in the MCU, and that's it. But that choreography, that fighting style, that is exactly what they do with super soldiers going forward in the MCU.
That's a great point. Although, like, he might have used the stuntmen that we later use on Cap. Like, the MCU might have just
hired... The same choreographers, the same... Yeah.
I would say the thing that he brings that I actually do think he brought is the Hulk's fighting style, which I do think carries over to Avengers. Because I actually think the Abomination Hulk fight is really, really good.
Okay.
I think the CG on both of them looks great. Oddly enough, I think Abomination looks better than Hulk, even though Hulk's the main character.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, because Abomination's got, like, these cool veins and the bone spurs. Like, he looks really detailed and not just, like, a singular thing.
Yeah.
I really like the look of him. They did a great job. But I think the fight is really, like, frenetic and desperate, and they don't really have a style, per se, because they've kind of forgotten, like, their training, because they're just monsters now. But there is this just, like, fastness and desperateness, but it's clean and easy to watch. And I feel it in, like, the helicarrier part of Hulk's fight with Thor, I think. Like when the guy shoots out of the plane and he grabs him real quick and then he, like, does his heli... And then his parachute comes out. Like, it feels like the same kind of, like, fast grab snaps that are in this movie.
Okay.
So I actually think they did kind of keep Hulk's style of fighting in Avengers from this movie. It's not that iconic, but when you watch them both back to back, it feels very much like... It feels very
quick
much
burst,
the same.
Very frenetic. Yeah, I can see what you're saying there. Yeah, I can definitely see the style of Hulk from this carrying over to the other ones. Mm-hmm. I agree with it. I think maybe one missed opportunity about Abomination in this one, though, is that they kind of set up this idea that with Blonsky, with Tim Roth's character, I like Tim Roth as an actor. I think he's fantastic. I think he plays this really well and is one of the more interesting characters kind of in this. Even though, like, this villain doesn't get a lot of love, I think it maybe should, and it could have been a lot more. But I like this character. I think the one downside is that who this character is doesn't really come across in Abomination form. So we have this whole plot line of, like, he is this elite soldier who is aging out of it. You know, Ross has this talk with him where it's like, you should be a general by now. You should have a desk job. You should be commanding people. You shouldn't be on the front lines. And it's I think, a relatable story of, like, someone who's just like, I'm aging out of the thing that I love to do, and that's a shame. But if I knew then what I know now, I could wreck.
Yeah, that conversation was very relatable, very real, very grounded.
But what he does is shoot good. He's a good shoot guy. Like, he's not like, if this character was The Rock, like someone who's like, I'm a fucking brawler. And like, I used to be an MMA fighter. And like, now I'm so much more knowledgeable, but now I'm aging out of the game. But he's not a brawler. He's not a fighter. He is a holding a gun commander. And he's like, if only I can get as big as the Hulk. And then he gets as big as Hulk. And he's like, and I throw shit. Like there's no cleverness. There's no feeling in that fight between Hulk and Abomination where I'm like, one of these dudes is a scientist and one of these dudes is a professionally trained killer. And the whole time I'm just like, these are two dudes who both throw things at each other good. And that was all that it really was. And Abomination, the visual effects look good, the style was cool, but it never felt like the character inside Abomination, who clearly is more sentient than what Hulk is, has the knowledge, training, and specialty of a British SAS officer who has done 20 years of wet work, you know?
I love this idea of that, of these two monsters fighting, and one of them knows martial arts, and one of them somehow, in the back of his mind, knows science.
Right.
And the Hulk wins with science.
Right, right.
I genuinely would love that.
Yeah.
If he was just like, oh, I know that these two things will make a bomb, and like that's how he beats Blonsky or something. Like just inherently knowing something.
I wasn't thinking that, but I'll go with you on that ride.
I like that idea a lot. Like how else would he beat him if he did inherently keep Blonsky's skills? I like that idea.
I was more thinking that they would then like lean into the like he is going to win by just wanting it more. Like he is the guy who's fueled by his anger, and Blonsky is trying to be like clever and win, and the Hulk does not give a fuck, and it is also then that traditional fight of training versus grit would kind of be the Hulk battle, not necessarily science versus, but I see what you're saying. I could get on board with that potentially.
No, I see what you're saying, because also with the Hulk, it's a very important kind of like King Kong-esque, like save Betty every scene.
Yeah.
Every scene is like, ooh, Ultimate Warrior style, you're down, you get back up because you gotta save Betty. You think he's down for the count. But yeah. There he is.
Yeah.
He's back up. He's angrier. He's bigger than he was before. But yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree that he doesn't feel like Blonsky anymore when he gets big. Which is a weird thing to say, because I'm not sure that Hulk even feels like Bruce anymore. But Blonsky is making full sentences about
personal connections prior of like, I wanted this, hey Ross, like knows who Ross is. I wanna like clearly he is motivated by his past life. The Hulk is not motivated by his past life, but Blonsky, as the Abomination, is motivated by his past life.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I will say, Tim Roth is so good, but I do find his casting just a little odd because he's such a small man.
Yes.
To have been like the greatest SAS officer ever, who's now 35 and 45? How long? 35 and
30 something
and like washing out. Cause like he has this one scene where he's walking down the hall with General Ross before he's gotten any injections. And I assume this is his natural height. And I'm like, Ross is like a foot and a half taller than you. You are a short guy.
Well, that's the thing is that he shoot gun good.
But that's what I'm saying. But you're right that he was never like, he was definitely never like a hand to hand guy.
Yeah.
He was never the guy who had to run faster than the other guys. Like he does once he gets super soldiered up.
Right.
This isn't like, if you got like, I don't even know. Yeah, The Rock, if The Rock was older than he is now. The Rock's actually getting kind of up there, but he still looks amazing. Yeah, you got to work a lot harder for it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, you know, The Rock or like a John Cena or a Dave Bautista or like someone of like that brick shit house size who's just like, I'm getting old. Like even I think bigger guy with even simple character traits, like I think it was it Army of the Dead where Dave Bautista needed glasses?
Yes, he did.
And just that little detail of like, I am a big man, but like I am vulnerable and have flaws and I need glasses. I am aging a little bit. Like you throw that kind of person in the role. But even though physically he doesn't fit it, Tim Roth is such a good actor that he really owns this character. I think it is weird in the first super soldier transformations that they almost go opposite of Captain America, where he gets smaller. So like Chris Evans Cap, Steve Rogers, goes into the machine and gets just swole. Just absolutely like gigantic ripped.
Very tiny, gets very big.
Gets very swole. Tim Roth stays the same size and just loses fat and water weight. Like, he just gets more, like, sinewy and just, like, it's all muscle, but he doesn't gain muscle. And it's a very, and I think purposefully upsetting look, but it is a weird opposite of what they've done with Captain America to be like, what if it made you a smaller bean, but a lean, mean fighting bean?
Yeah, you're more compact. It's all muscle.
Yeah.
The only thing you got to keep is your muscle. But yeah, he didn't get big. I mean, Cap wasn't going to get made for like 3 more years. They didn't know how yet. They didn't know Cap was going to happen. But yeah, looking back, it almost even feels like that's the problem, because they don't put him in a tube like Cap was.
Yeah.
They just stick him with the needle stuff, so they don't do the Vita Rays that Stark did. So he is missing a component, as we learn later when we see Cap get the serum. We're like, okay, this isn't all the right stuff. You're not in a tube.
Yeah.
Where's your tube?
Yeah.
Can't do this with a tube.
You can't do it with no tube, yeah.
Can't do it.
So it's a weird transition that they do for him, but clearly it works to a certain degree, and General Ross could have just done more of it.
I mean, I don't want him to have more soldiers because he kind of sucks, but I just don't believe for a second they're like, we don't need to try out the rest of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
they definitely keep it up.
I think one relationship they were close to in this movie, close to getting right, that then Ant-Man does really well, which is modern family and romance. Like, the fact that Betty's new boyfriend isn't a dick.
Yes!
That, it's weird how, like, there are certain things about this movie that feel like late 90s, like the product placement and some shit like that. And then there's stuff that feels like the 2020s. It feels like some things feel 10 years ahead. And having a progressive modern perspective of romance where it's not I'm the ex-boyfriend and I'm right and every new boyfriend after me is inherently an evil human being. It's just like, no, people just have multiple relationships and romances over the course of their lives, and not all of them are villains other than you. And that is a very selfish way of viewing and perceiving the world and romance. But this movie actually does get that right, to be like, the new dude maybe isn't right for Betty, but is a nice dude in his own way. And I think Ant-Man kind of gets that better later, that take of like, I don't like my, and they kind of go through like I don't like my ex-wife's new boyfriend. I actually do like him, and they evolve and progress. This doesn't have the evolution of a character, but it has the nugget of something that's very modern and real.
Yeah, you definitely don't think Ty Burrell, her new boyfriend, is a villain at the end. Like, he did call the cops on him, but all he knew about Bruce was that he killed 4 people when he escaped the lab as the Hulk, which seems to be a thing he actually did do. Like, obviously not on purpose. It was the first time he hulked out. He couldn't control it. But, like, if you see that guy hanging out with your girlfriend, you're going to be like, I should probably call 911. I've been told many times by General Ross to do this.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't do it because he's upset Betty saw his, it doesn't feel like he's like, I got to get Betty's old boyfriend in jail. It does feel like he's like, I think you're in danger.
I saw you on the news as an international terrorist.
Yeah, I thought you were in danger. That's why I called General Ross.
I'm not even calling regular police. I've got to call the whole ass FBI. I got transferred to SHIELD, a branch of the government I didn't know was real until today. That is how serious you are as a fugitive. So I think that, he is entirely reasonable in having done that. And the film rightfully portrays him as being relatively reasonable for having done that.
Yeah, I even like that quick conversation with Stanley, the pizza guy. He was like, he's nice, he's good to her. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because she's a reasonable woman and she wouldn't date an asshole.
Yeah.
Why would her next boyfriend be an asshole if she's dated good men before?
I do think it is weird that they don't differentiate him from Bruce a little bit, because he is like kind of like, nice guy, also a professor, and he's just Bruce too. I think it could have worked a little better if he had any of his own personality traits, but he, as Bruce too, he is fine.
Yeah, I think his only difference is that he was a therapist, so he wouldn't be doing any kind of dangerous science.
Right. Not professor, doctor. Yeah.
Yeah, he was just a therapist or a psychiatrist or something. They said head doctor, so I don't know which doctorate he had.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I don't think he's a safer scientist to perhaps be with. But definitely she has a type. She just walks around the university just looking indoors.
Nice doctor?
Nice doctor.
Polite doctor?
Brunette nice doctor?
Nice doctor who avoids eye contact. Is there a nice doctor who avoids eye contact?
You know what?
I'm
just gonna send out an email to the whole school. I'm just going to send out one
She's
of those
looking
masks.
In on a lab. There's one doctor who's not making eye contact or answering her question. She's like, it's you. You. Get over here.
She's out there dating Martin Starr right now.
Yeah, we're going out. Nah, he made eye contact, so that's
he
no did. Good.
He wanted the pizza real bad.
Yeah, he made direct eye contact, so that's gonna be on him.
Mm-hmm. I think my last thing I need to talk about for the Hulk is the Tony Stark end credit scene.
Okay.
Which was groundbreaking at the time. Like, I know my group of nerd friends was losing our minds about this. I don't think there'd ever been a payoff for one of these kind of Easter eggs before this movie. Mm. Like, I feel like, you know, you get a Spider-Man movie and they reference that Superman exists. Or you get a Batman movie where they're like, you know, that guy in the cape in Metropolis, but you never actually visit it. Like, I feel like movies and shows had done references before, but obviously this is our first giant crossover that actually happened, like two separate movies that actually crossed over that I can think of.
Right. Yeah.
This was so big.
Yeah.
And these movies came out a month apart.
They
That's
really shotgunned
wild.
These back to back. Yeah.
Considering I was under the impression that Marvel Studios had like no money when they made Iron Man, I don't know how Hulk came out a month later. I guess maybe Universal was paying for it. That might explain it.
I mean, well, the thing was Marvel was its own studio. It wasn't its own full production house. All right, so some of the divisions are weird, but essentially Marvel as its own studio had already made the Blade movies.
Oh, yes, that was
so
Marvel.
They had
right.
already made huge success with the Blade movie. So everyone kind of remembers like Iron Man being the start of Marvel Studios. Marvel made three successful Blade movies, then started the MCU. But they didn't have their own distribution until Phase 2. So they were partners with Paramount and Universal, but they were still their own studio. So like they had money. They had done three blockbuster summer action movies previously with the Blade movies.
But the timing of the two MCU firsts is such a shotgun. Like normally you have to wait so many years between superhero movies. Yeah. It was wild to see Iron Man and be like, this movie is incredible. It's groundbreaking. And then a month later to be like, Tony Stark is back, James Bond style already. Like, he is already here.
Yeah.
The MCU is real.
Yeah. And, like, eventually they do, you know, they have wrinkles to iron out. Like, the post-credit scene is him approaching General Ross about the team. And it's like, General Ross never comes up again as a part of the team. Or like, he comes up later in Civil War, obviously. But then when we get to Avengers, it is just S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, Ross doesn't even know about the Avengers Initiative until that shit is off the ground.
And also in Iron Man 2, Nick Fury tells Stark he's not good enough to be an Avenger.
Before
Avengers even happen. So eventually he obviously is good enough to become an Avenger. There is a one-shot with Coulson that explains what happened there.
Okay.
Like, just to smooth out the wrinkles. I think it was something like they wanted General Ross to say no, so they sent Stark because they knew Ross hated Stark.
Okay.
But they had to say that they offered it. It was some like weird, like, okay, whatever, Marvel. You really wanted this scene to make sense 8 years later.
right.
So they did like a DVD one shot that I remember that explained it. But yeah, do you remember like seeing this? Like, were you freaking out?
I remember seeing this. I don't remember freaking out. Like, I remember Nick Fury, like Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury being way bigger. Mm. And this, I feel like this was, I can't remember if it was like rumored beforehand to be like, these are going to legit connect. And I remember being like, wow, that's incredible. But it wasn't the same as Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury.
Oh, I think Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury didn't do as much for me because it was like a promise that wasn't fulfilled yet. I'm like, well, that's not an Avengers movie. Like, a lot of movies have these kind of like end things that never that never play out. Mm. But Tony Stark showing up was like, no, we said and we did. They are connected. Like, it connected them. And so, yeah, I was losing my mind. I also think I didn't know. I don't think I was online too much.
It
was also, like, I'd graduated university the month Iron Man came out. Like, I was busy.
Okay.
I wasn't online doing shit. Like, I looked at the dates and I'm like, oh, no, I was busy that week.
Okay.
I had a full week. I was moving into a new place. So I think I wasn't online, like, reading rumors about stuff. So, yeah,
gotcha.
I just... It was so huge. It's still huge to me. It's still really, even after all these years, I'm still like, oh my God, they connected these shit.
They really tied it together really well. Yeah, it's a powerful post credit. I don't remember freaking out quite as much as you, but I remember freaking out more for Iron Man 1. But I think also part of it is because I see what you're saying, that like the second one, this post credit, it makes it real.
Yeah.
This puts it in concrete to be like, it's actually happening. But I think it being a mediocre movie, it more so felt like an ending promise that was never going to be fulfilled, like other movies I'd seen in the past. Whereas Iron Man was such a perfect spectacular that at the end of it, Samuel L. Jackson shows up, and there was no part of me that even for a moment thought about the business side of things and is this a logistical possibility or what's happening with the future of Marvel. In that moment, I lived in the world that Tony Stark lived in. Like, as an audience member, I had forgotten who I humanly was. Andrew Ivan me stopped existing, and I was just someone witnessing, like, history of this world I somehow lived in. So Samuel Jackson shows up, and I'm like, I'm in. I know, I'm like, you're going to fulfill this promise, of course. And at the end of this movie, I'm like, oh, yeah, I wonder if as a studio they can tie all this. Like, there was more skepticism because I wasn't pulled into this story in the same way.
I think that makes total sense because I think when you watch Iron Man for the first time, there's no doubt in your mind you will see an Iron Man 2.
Mm.
Like, Iron Man is so good, so groundbreaking. Everything about it is phenomenal. But I think when you watch Incredible Hulk, you watch it and you're like, well, I'm never going to see the leader again. And you don't.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm never going to see the Abomination again. I'll never see Edward Norton or Betty Ross again.
Yeah.
So why would I think Tony Stark and the Hulk will be back together?
Yeah.
I get that. No, I think that makes sense. The mediocreness of the movie might detract from it.
Yeah. And even like I would say within like a day of seeing this movie and every time since, I always mix up the leader from this movie with the big head guy from Green Lantern.
Oh, yeah. I do as well.
Yeah. So like, I forget which character, the Thinker or whatever he is in DC. I forget what that character is in DC. The
Thinker
other big head guy.
Right.
Oh, no, there's a different Thinker in DC. So the big head guy in DC.
I always also think he's Sinestro, even though I know he's not. So like, yeah. I'm not a Green Lantern girl.
Yeah, so I think that these two are the exact same person. And so the ending felt very Green Lantern to me, to be like, oh, we've got a big head guy who's going to come back for the next one. I'm like, Hollywood has never approved big head guy in anything. We didn't get the Green Lantern one. We didn't get the Incredible Hulk one. We're not getting big head villains. It is the most idiotic villain design that maybe is funny in a comic. It will never work on camera. Like, there is no scenario. There's lots of silly costumes that they come up with clever ways to make work on camera. Giant egg-shaped head does not read on screen if you're not Batman 66 doing it for a joke.
Even then, like, Vincent Price just shaved his head.
Yeah, even
they
that,
didn't even give him a big
they,
head.
They didn't give him
and
a big head
a
like the
comics.
That
was a comedy show.
Yeah.
That show was a comedy show, and they didn't. And I think you're right. I don't remember if Green Lantern was already out yet, but you're still right about big heads.
Yeah,
big heads are
big
only
heads.
Big heads. I think maybe like Suicide Squad could do it. Like
yeah, the as
Thinker,
a joke.
The Thinker could have had a big head.
He could have had a giant head as a joke. Yeah.
Oh, that's the Thinker.
Yeah. That's what
David
I mean. That's what I mean. There's a different Thinker in DC.
Yeah, there is a different big green head
guy. And I forget
guy.
Who the Green Lantern. We'll have looked it up by now. Don't bother tweeting at us. Don't at me. I will have just Googled it. But you can't do big heads on screen.
All right, you can't do big heads on screen.
All right, well, that's all I have to say about the Incredible Hulk. How you feeling?
I'm feeling hulky? Incredible? I mean, incredible is a better word. Incredible.
That is incredible. That is an adjective.
Yeah, hulky ain't anything.
No. Well, let's go in for the close where we ask the final question of what would you change? So now we've discussed everything we discussed. What would you change? But before we do ask the final question, we want to remind you, as we do every week, if you haven't already, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us move up the charts. It helps us get recommended to new listeners. There's a reason that we ask you to do this. There's a reason that most podcasts ask you to do this. It's free. It supports the show. It helps us grow and expand, and it means a lot to us.
It does mean the world to us. We read those reviews. They mean a lot. People considering listening to our podcast read those reviews, and if they're positive, that really, really helps us out. We need your help.
Yeah.
Help. Help us, Obi-Wan, whoever you are listening. You're our only hope. Please leave us a review.
So leave a
Star Wars references on the Incredible Hulk episode. It makes all the sense in the world.
So leave a review when you get a chance. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a nice review. It helps us out. It's a free way to support the show. You can also support the show for free just by sharing it on social media with your friends or whoever. Word of mouth is also a great way for us to get out there and find new listeners, because we don't have an advertising budget. We just have word of mouth. So tell your friends about us. And if you do want to support this podcast monetarily, you can check us out over on our Patreon at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. Patreon's a monthly subscription service where you can subscribe at however much you can afford. You can do $1 a month, you can do 5, 10, 100, lots of different number options. And with that, you can get different cool bonuses as well. So you can get our webcomic a day early just for doing the $1 level. And at the $10 hero level, you get bonus episodes of the podcast every single month.
And you get access to all the old episodes as soon as you sign up at the $10 level. So there's just so much talk from superheroes waiting for you guys.
Absolutely.
Just oodles.
Oodles. So head on over, patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. That's patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And when you head over there, you can kick in whatever you can afford if it's in your budget. If not, we understand. But if it is, we appreciate you greatly.
We appreciate it so much. Take care of yourselves first, but we'll take your ducats if you got a ducat.
There we go. And now let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? Diana, what would you change?
I don't have very big changes for this because, as we said, like, it all kind of works. It's just never great. So I would have a few little changes. I would like Blonsky. I always want my villains to be more personal. So I would like Blonsky to have a more personal connection. I kind of would like it if he was, like, I think, close with the men that he works with. And maybe Hulk kills or injures a few of them in that first factory fight. And he's like, I'd still want to be stronger because I'm getting older and stuff. But, like, I also want revenge. Like, just give me a little bit more something, like, for him and Hulk to have, like, a connection and a reason to be fighting. So I would like it if Blonsky was like, I brought my own men. We all go in together. We've been a crew that's working together for years. Maybe Blonsky's the only one who walks out of there. I think that would be really cool. And then just in terms of Betty, probably recast, but no matter what. A thing they did is they made Betty a scientist who doesn't do any science. Betty Ross in the comics is not a scientist for the most part. I think in recent years, maybe they've changed her, but, like, she, growing up, she was not a scientist. She was just a love interest. So, like, Betty Ross is a scientist. She's got a USB drive with data on it. Will she do any science to help Bruce? She will not.
We see her in a lab coat once.
We do see her in that lab coat once, and she teaches, I guess, but she, like, offers nothing to help Mr. Blue figure out what's going on with Bruce. She doesn't have information she needs, like, from her own mind. She just has the USB drive. So I don't even have a specific way I want to incorporate her sciencing, or, like, maybe he needs to go see her because he genuinely needs her help because he can't do the science she does.
Right, right.
Like, this is a reason that he has to reconnect with her. Or she at least helps with Mr. Blue at the end when they're trying to cure Bruce and, like, figures out the missing piece or something. Like, let this scientist lady do some science. And that would, like, make Betty a little bit more rounded of a character for me and not just a wispy in love with Bruce Liv Tyler. So Blonsky more personal. Betty does science. Those are my changes.
Interesting.
Andrew, what would you change?
I like that. Yeah, Blonsky more personal. Betty does science, I think, are both terrific. I can 100% get on board with both of those. My big change would be they need to make Ross more clear, and like General Ross more, like, clear in his motivations. And they need to remove the ambiguity around Ross, which is actually what bothers me the most.
Ooh, okay.
Is that they won't admit that this dude's a villain. So when they talk about it, and because they skip his origin story, and I get what happened to create the Hulk. We can skip that aspect of the origin story. Gamma radiation, angry man, go big green now. Like, not, like, there's nothing we need to know there. But there are times where I'm like, what the fuck was this, and why do you own it? Like, when General Ross is like, that university experiment wasn't ready yet, and Betty has to be like, he did it because he thought it was? Well, that's because I withheld some information. And as an audience member, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Why did Bruce rush to do this? And it makes it seem like, was he trying to do an experiment you didn't want him to do that he thought was ready? But Ross is making it sound like it's an experiment they wanted him to do, but Bruce hurried it for no reason at all. So it's like they don't want to get General Ross's hands too dirty in this movie. It's like they don't want to imply that it's his fault Bruce is the Hulk. And because like they still need to be like, Bruce still loves his daughter. It's too personal. We don't want to make him a full-on villain. And same thing with Blonsky. With Blonsky, they're like, they gave him the super soldier serum. It worked. He hurt himself afterwards. Don't worry about it. Ross is still fine. Ross did the best he could. So yeah, they're doing this very panicked, like, we don't want you to dislike Ross too much. And I don't understand why. Maybe they're like, we'll make him an anti-hero Red Hulk later, or they were setting up something. But I don't know why or how he's at fault for the Hulk incident. Clearly he has a personal connection. It was maybe a university experiment that was military funded that wasn't ready yet, that they wanted to pull the funding on, that Bruce went ahead. But I'm filling in so many details as to why he has anything to do with the experiment. If it was just like Bruce doing his own shit, and then later Ross is like, we like that and want that thing. Mm-hmm. That would make more sense and be clearer to me than what's going on now. So, but I would like his hands to be dirty, to be like, we were funding you. We were going to pull funding, or like we cheaped out on something or fucked up. I need his hands to be dirty on the creation of the Hulk. And I need his hands to be dirty on the creation of Abomination. Mm-hmm. Like I would need, instead of a like, here's a super soldier serum that actually works a little, and we're going to be very responsible. And if you show any symptoms or side effects, we're going to pull you from the field. And please be responsible and follow my orders. I don't want you first in. I do not want you first in because this is still a trial pro. Like he is a very calm and responsible military man. And Blonsky has to do all the bad stuff himself, when in reality it should be, you're a military man who is experimenting on humans in peacetime. You should be a villain. You should absolutely be a villain. The moral complications are there even with Steve in World War II during wartime. This is peacetime on American soil, human experimentation trials. You should be a guilty party and a complex dude who's kind of a dick, who's like, the only way to bring in Hulk is to make an abomination. I'm not going to tell this soldier all the information, or I'm going to throw him under the bus, or I don't care if he's sick and doesn't get his humanity back. There should be this level of, or like, I need one of those, but who follows orders. They just don't want to get Ross's hands dirty. And I need Ross to be a guilty figure.
Yeah, he really is kind of just like, not to steal our other podcast, but like, as I was watching this, I was like, villain was right to defend this guy.
100%.
Like, he's like, yeah, as you said, totally cool to Blonsky about like your health and your safety. I am not going to be reckless with you as a human being. I will mourn you when you get hurt in this fight, like genuinely. He definitely isn't evil. He implies definitely that the government was paying for Bruce's experiments, I think, because he says like, as far as I'm concerned, I own every drop of Bruce's blood.
Yeah.
But like, if these are government experiments that are supposed to be done on soldiers, why would you let the guy who made the experiment do it? Like, you were in the room when Bruce did this.
Or why did you not want him to do it and he had to do it himself? Yeah. Why are you guilty in some way?
Yeah, you're not guilty enough either.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he walks too fine a line.
Yeah, yeah. And I want him to be like, he needs to be the villain. He is the villain of this movie. And eventually at the end of the movie, he does come around and be like, we need to help Hulk. And he's, you know, he's still the villain, but he's like a reluctant, helpful. He's a complicated figure. But I feel like that's kind of where he always was. Like, you need to make him more of a villain to give him somewhere to grow, because otherwise he is someone who like is just mysteriously medium on Hulk and then ends the movie 1% closer to kind towards Hulk. And that's not enough of a character growth.
Yeah, no, that's not enough. And Blonsky isn't, like, purely evil either in any way.
Yeah.
He does really just want to be like, I want to stop that giant monster.
I think he wants power for himself, but, like...
He's never hurts anyone that doesn't deserve it.
It's not enough to be the solo villain.
Yeah. Not evil enough.
Yeah.
All right, not evil enough. I can get behind that.
Not evil enough. Not evil enough. Betty needs to do science and more personal connection with Blonsky.
Those are my changes. Those are your changes. I think they're good.
Yeah, I think it's not bad, because with Blonsky and Ross, like, this is close to having some of the better villains of the MCU, but they just don't utilize it well.
They have two of the
best villain actors in the MCU, maybe.
Ooh, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's up there.
All right. Well, that's going to be it for the Incredible Hulk. Thank you for listening. Next week, we are going to be back talking more MCU with Shang-Chi next week.
Oh, boy. fine. New MCU.
New
so
MCU.
Much MCU.
Hot stuff. We're going to be back with it. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamey, I-V-I-M-E-Y.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll talk to y'all next week.
Bye.